Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details. Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store at Lowe's.com for details.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Knowing Wheel episode 50. Yes, we're back. We've reached the half century. Get the party poppers out, I suppose, ready for this one today. But, as always, we return once more. The Australian Grand Prix this weekend. I'm back with Jamie183. How on earth are we doing, mate?
I'm very good, yeah. Pretty tired, still recovering from Sunday morning.
Yeah.
But there we go. And I'm also not at home, which is, yeah, you could probably tell already, since I'm literally holding my mic in my hand. Yeah. So, yeah, looking forward to going over the race, although I'm feeling quite disappointed, as probably you already know, seeing as who I support, but there we go.
Yeah, yeah, it was not the best weekend for Jamie, but that being said, yeah, we've got plenty to go through here today. Quickly, as always, though, just from me, all the links down below, of course. If you're watching this on YouTube, say hello. You know, if you don't want to see, apparently Jamie's looking very, very pale in this episode today. If you don't want to see that, you'd rather go watch us or listen to us only, go check the links out on Spotify down below as well. We cannot thank you guys enough for the continued support over there. I also just want to say, obviously, a quick shout out to F1 Merch. There'll be links to that down below as well. And then, of course, Bybit, the new channel sponsor as well. You know, if you're interested in checking that one out, I'll leave all the information down in the comments, or down in the description below, sorry, top line there. And, of course, there'll be a little bit on your screen at the moment, sort of talking about that. But, yeah, as always, though, Jamie, Australia. Before we got into it, though, Sebastian Vettel, finally back. We mentioned this last week, didn't we? Personally, sort of getting towards Wednesday, Thursday, was getting a bit hyped about this, actually. I thought maybe Seb is what Aston Martin need.
How wrong you were.
Yeah,
it was nice to have him back, obviously. He was on quite good form in the press conferences and stuff, but
especially, yeah, after practice.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of all went badly, basically, immediately for him. Never really picked up, but yeah, it was all right to see him back. I mean, neither of us are huge Seb fans.
No.
I respect that he was good like 10 years ago, but yeah, that's a bit of a sideswipe on him. Maybe 5 years ago, we'll give him that. But yeah, I mean, it's nice having him back. I don't see him sticking around at F1 for so much longer, so I'm sure his fans will be savouring this as it stands.
Yeah, I think neither of us are particularly convinced Seb's going to be here for the long run, but yeah, but no starting back, you know, sort of having the proper grid back for the first time this year. Of course, we also had the Australian track changes. That was highly anticipated heading into the weekend. We were obviously going to have to wait and see as to how that would pan out. Pretty much immediately, though, after free practice, we went back to 3 DRS zones rather than the 4.
I didn't actually know that until qualifying started, obviously, because I think it was announced, like, overnight in the UK. So yeah, I woke up for quali and it was like, oh, there's no DRS zone here anymore, which I was quite happy about, to be honest. I don't think it would have been great to have cars running side by side into turn 11, especially as the few times we did see that happen, it ended quite badly for a couple of drivers.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
even without DRS. So if DRS was there and it was just encouraging people to go for dangerous moves, I think, yeah, something bad definitely could have happened with a very high speed corner if two cars are running side by side through there. It might not have ended too well for both of them. So yeah, 3 zones I think was quite all right. We saw certainly more overtaking than usual at Australia. So yeah, I mean the cars worked pretty well in terms of following, and yeah, the track changes definitely I think helped.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we'll discuss that more and more as the race went on. But of course, immediately then we mentioned Sebastian Vettel was back in his Aston Martin this weekend. Pretty much as soon as practice got going, though, that car broke down.
Yeah. like he'll be drawing his lines back on his COVID test, I'm sure. But was it FP1, wasn't it? The car
FP1 just,
like, immediately basically broke down. I think before the race he'd done something like 18 laps, was it?
Oh, that like, seems about right. Honestly, yeah, that seems high. But
yeah, and like obviously he's not done the previous two races either, so yeah, testing's all he's got. And did he miss a couple of testing days? I can't remember. I don't think so, no.
But I mean, so, that was a month ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago now. So yeah, obviously he's still gonna be getting to grips with this car, and the car didn't help him out by breaking down immediately. The motorbikes or the scooter pictures were very funny,
but yes, yeah,
yeah, I saw people getting annoyed about like the FIA giving her a fine, but these drivers are paid millions. Like, who cares about, what was it, $5,000 or something?
$5,000.
Yeah.
And it's euros. That's actually, like, as well.
It's actually pennies. Like, he will not care. I mean, Max got, what was it, for in Brazil? 50K, was it? $50,000.
And he said he'd rather just spent it on FIFA packs.
Yeah, he did not care in his slightest. So that will literally be, like, not even scratching the surface with Seb. So, yeah, it's just the rules, isn't it? You can't enter the track however long it is after a session ends.
Yeah, and then he also got investigated for speeding in the pit lane on that moped, didn't he?
That would have been very... I don't know if he did get a fine for that, but...
I don't think that would be extremely funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, imagine, like, speeding on a...
on a moped, yeah, getting done in the pit lane. Hamilton needs to be so careful funny. On his e-scooters, don't he now?
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, Seb's bad weekend, though, obviously, then meant he was out of FP2, couldn't do any running there because the team were having to put a whole fresh engine in. And then very early on in FP3, he went and binned it again at turn 10. Yeah. And it was just that, like, it was all falling apart, like, before the weekend had even started.
Yeah, and it was... Yeah, so they wouldn't have got it fixed for Q1. But there was a helpful red flag in Q1 that we'll get onto later. But mainly, well, they also couldn't get it fixed because, helpfully, the other driver... for the team also binned it in FP3 on his own.
Yes.
So yeah. It's so rare that anyone crashes from any team in FP3, or it doesn't happen too often throughout the season. And it happened for the same team on the same race weekend. So they had two cars to fix in like 3 hours. So I felt a bit for Aston Martin. I'm sure the mechanics weren't best pleased when they literally like worked their fingers to the bone getting both cars fixed, and then one of them crashed in Q1 and one of them crashed in the race. So, yeah, plenty of spare parts needed for Aston this weekend, but there we go.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we'll talk more about where they stand overall when we do a bit of a season round, or like a first season roundup later on in the campaign. But Aston Martin are just not looking anywhere near sort of giving... I mean, I think, let's be fair, now every team at some point this year has given us some semblance of confidence, and apart from Aston Martin, there's been none of that still, really, from them.
There's no light at the end of the tunnel, as it stands, I don't think.
No, exactly. We all also saw, though, quickly as we run through the rest of free practice, Hamilton almost did a Lance Stroll, but just about kept it out of the wall. And then Ferrari, just all weekend long, weren't they, were looking completely in control. Apart from Lando Norris, went fastest in FP3.
Yeah, I woke up to that. Seeing McLaren back on top was a bit weird after their performance in the Middle East to start the season. But yeah, it was quite nice to see him back. I'm sure we'll get into it more later. But
yes,
Leclerc seemed very much on it this weekend specifically.
Exactly. Then we move into qualifying, and probably the most controversial and weirdest / stupidest moment of the entire weekend, wasn't it, Jamie?
Yeah, definitely. It was so strange. The end of Q1. Was it? No, it was about midway through, wasn't it? There was about 2 or 3 minutes left.
Eight minutes left of the session.
8 minutes, fair. Latifi and Stroll, who, in my opinion, two of the weaker drivers on the grid. Probably, definitely two of the bottom five, maybe two of the bottom three. But, yeah they completely made a right hash of it, really. Down towards between turn four and turn five, Latifi gets out of the way of Stroll, thinking he's on a quick lap, which he isn't. Latifi also gets out of the way very unorthodoxly and just like pulls completely off to the left hand side, pretty much into the barrier, like off completely off the racing line.
And then towards the racing line by the time Stroll gets to him.
And then Stroll went past. Latifi's like, oh, he's not going to call it quick lap. I guess I'll go past him again then, because why wouldn't you? And then Stroll doesn't see him coming and completely sideswipes effectively Latifi. Very similar to what he did in Sepang 2017 on the cooldown lap with Vettel. But yeah, Stroll, just complete lack of awareness. Latifi was a bit like, it wasn't the best like decision, I don't think, to go down the inside there really, but it was definitely on Stroll, this one.
Yeah.
But Latifi, that's what, four cars that he's crashed in three race weekends?
Yeah, it's not looking good so far this year for Latifi. He's going to be right up there on the damage costs.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But it was just such a stupid moment, wasn't it?
It was just unnecessary. It's like neither of you have much of a shot of getting out of Q1.
No.
At least get through it without crashing. I don't even think Latifi had set a time.
No, or he hadn't.
Like,
I don't think.
It's like, how hard can it be just to not run into each other?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And I mean, there was all this talk, wasn't there, that, you know, perhaps Stroll was trying to get out of the way of the Alfa Romeo that was also apparently on a quick lap and then wasn't.
Which he wasn't, yeah.
No, so I don't know, that's why then Latifi... It just, none of it made any sense, didn't it? It was just bizarre, pointless, and idiotic. Probably most on the side of Lance Stroll, but not great by either of them.
There's a great video on Reddit of, I think it was 22 times that Stroll has...
14, yeah, no, I've seen that. It's like a 15-minute video, isn't it?
Yeah. Of, like, Stroll blocking people or driving into people or turning into people and not realizing they're there. It's a bit of a common occurrence. Like, just use your mirrors. Or, I mean, I guess it's a bit on the team as well, because obviously drivers, the mirror visibility is not great. So you kind of got to be told when cars are behind you.
So, but it's just overtaking him.
Yeah, I guess. I don't even know. It's...
Yeah, I think, the more we try to make sense of it, the less sense it makes, doesn't it? It's just idiotic by Lance and Latifi there. But, yeah, that meant they joined their teammates and Kevin Magnussen out in Q1. A bit gutting to see Haas nowhere near where we've sort of seen him earlier on this year.
Yeah, it was a weird one. I think they put it down to, like, not setting the car up right, but...
Yeah.
Setup doesn't cost you like 0.8 usually or something like that. Like, they were a lot.
Depends how badly you set it up, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. But they, I don't know if, like, maybe their car's super suited to, like, the tracks like Jeddah and Bahrain, but Australia is not that dissimilar to those tracks really now with all the straights
on
it.
No, exactly.
But it was a weird one, but yeah, definitely not on the pace. I think it was also impacted by the likes of McLaren and who else is up there?
Like, Alpine really strong this weekend. Yeah, this is the other thing, wasn't it? You know, we've sort of seen both Alpha and Haas have these sort of glory runs at the start of the year, but now we're starting to see the other teams you'd expect to be ahead of them, more of them than being ahead of them. But yeah, I'm just already getting a little bit worried, you know, that we're starting to see the Haas of like 2016 and 2018, 2019, where they start the year really strong and then just immediately go backwards.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll score more points. Like, there's no doubt about that. But I just think...
I'm not convinced it'll be many.
Oh, I think, if you think about 2016, I think it was, what, Grosjean started the year with a 6th and a 5th, and then kept picking up points here and there in the odd race, but I think that's kind of what we can expect now, rather than, like, consistent Q3 appearances and consistent points.
Yeah,
which is kind of not a good sign, since that's kind of how this whole spiral into turmoil started, was just mass inconsistency, basically.
Well, but it just makes no sense, does it?
Yeah.
How can they build such a fast car for the first two weekends of the year and then immediately just forget everything about it?
Yeah, even 2019, Australia, Magnussen scored 7th in the first race.
And then Austria, they did really well that year.
Yeah, and then the rest of the time they were just going backwards. It's like a fundamental misunderstanding of what a car is, which is quite useful. So, yeah, hopefully they pick it up for their sake, but I think we can get used to seeing more times them not scoring points than they are scoring points.
Yeah. This was then followed up at the end of Q1 with Albon getting disqualified, which was not good for my fantasy team, I must admit.
After we stopped recording last week, we were having a chat about... I had a quick look at down the rules and the scoring system for fantasy, and we were like, oh, if you get disqualified, you get minus 10 points. That's weird, because no one ever gets disqualified.
Yeah,
and
I might have
got a driver in his team.
Yeah, I went and put Albon in my team, and he immediately goes and gets disqualified, but... You know, we'll discuss F1 Fantasy a bit further on in the video. Moving into Q2, though, Jamie, no major surprises there, was there? I guess the only sort of real talking point was Bottas's 102 qualifying Q3 appearances came to an end.
Yeah, and that's definitely a record that will stand for a while, you imagine?
Yes.
Well, they're saying that. I know Max won't be on a good run, will he? Because he had engine pens and stuff last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with the likes of power unit changes and all that and inconsistencies now and how competitive the grid is, it's hard to see that getting beaten for a long while. But fair play, Valtteri. Every single race for Mercedes.
Yeah, and which is mad.
The first two races for Alfa Romeo, which is crazy. And even if, like, interestingly, the one from Abu Dhabi 2016, he qualified 11th. Before that, he was got Q3 like every race that season, pretty much.
So yeah, this could have easily been like 130 races.
Yeah, but yeah, there we go. Good run.
It's all over. End up,
yeah, he can start a new run next race in Q3 once again. Although it's sprint quali, isn't it?
But I guess yes, Q3 and it's not next week.
Oh yeah, 2 weeks time. There you go.
But yeah, so it was then both Alphas, both Alfa Tauris, and Mick Schumacher out in Q2. He did a good job actually. Returned going ahead of K-Mag.
Yeah, K-Mag, I think, was feeling a bit off it.
Yeah, he was ill this weekend. I had forgot about that, to be fair. Then we get into Q3, Jamie, and things immediately get spicy. Now, I was at work when qualifying was going on, so I didn't quite sort of get the full picture of this. But Fernando Alonso was looking like he might cause the upset of the year. El Plan, they've been looking strong throughout all of practice. He goes green in Sector 1, mere thousands off of Charles Leclerc's best time. He goes purple in Sector 2. They say Fernando Alonso was on an absolute flyer and immediately cut to him in the wall.
Yes, and it was very painful for someone as a Fernando Alonso owner in fantasy.
Yes. Again,
we'll get onto that later. But yeah, I don't think he would have got pole.
No, personally. No. But he could have easily been fourth or fifth.
Yeah, he could have been top five for sure.
Well,
I think
all
the way through qualifying, the Alpine, he was going consistently close to purple in the middle sector. The straight-line speed of it was mad. And obviously the middle sector is just...
It's not even one proper braking zone anymore, is it?
It's not even one braking zone. It's what, turn 6 till turn 11, just before turn 11. So it's basically just flat. So,
and that's where the Alpine's always been really good at really high-end engine power, isn't it?
Yeah, like Monza a couple of years ago, they were fourth, fifth, wasn't it, with Ricciardo and Hulk?
Yes,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, they've always been pretty good at very, very top-end speed, but I don't think he would have got pole. I think he probably could have got top four at a push.
This is the weird thing, isn't it? Because he could have probably got top four, but then Sainz would have probably gone faster than him because there was no red flag.
So
Alonso Sainz would have probably been fifth, sensibly.
Yeah. I couldn't see him getting ahead of a Ferrari or Red Bull in circumstances.
No, but
really.
He could have been fairly close, I think, because Ferrari were rapid, even in comparison to Red Bull, through that final sector, weren't they? They seemed to be able to hang on down the straights elsewhere and then had way more through the final twisty bit. But, Sainz, like we said, though, got completely screwed by Alonso binning it. Of course, couldn't get his first qualifying running, which would have probably netted him P4 overall, at the very worst.
Then
completely bottled his final two runs, or his final run.
He was kind of unfortunate. I see people saying it bottled it in Q3, like the end of Q3, which is technically true, but... Also, all race, all qualifying long, Ferraris were doing two warm-up laps to get the tyres into the window.
Yeah.
And then the end of Q3, they didn't have time because of the red flag. So, he couldn't... Or was it not? Maybe there was a mechanical problem, wasn't there? They couldn't get him out there as soon as he wanted.
Yeah.
So he didn't have time to do two warm-up laps. Therefore, the tyres were not in the window. Obviously, it was still... He should have done better than ninth, but... I think when he's putting that much pressure on himself and he's got very highly compromised, no backup plan because his first lap didn't count. Yeah, it was very unlucky for Sainz, but it sort of got away from him and there wasn't much he could do, really.
No, exactly. And of course, we'll discuss in a moment just how much worse Sainz's weekend got. But that meant Leclerc set a storming lap on his final Q3 run there. Only man down into the 117s. 0.3 clear of Max Verstappen for the pole. There was Sergio Perez in P3. Lando Norris, though, special shout out to him. McLaren, nowhere in the first two races of the year, suddenly put the cars 4th and 7th.
Was it not 4th and 6th? Or was Russell ahead of Ricciardo?
It was definitely both Mercs together.
Okay. Yeah. It was incredible. Incredibly good form from McLaren. Like, right there with Mercedes, especially in quali pace. I don't think in the race they had much of a chance with Mercedes. But... yeah, easily 4th fastest over the race weekend. Like, that's kind of where they want to be, at the very least, at the start of the season. And it looked like they were going to be like 8th, 9th in Bahrain especially. But yeah, it's nice to see him back. Although it does, it kind of pushes other teams back down, which you kind of like Like, we like the novelty of seeing Alpha and Haas right up there, but I don't think that'll continue for...
It was never going to last, was it?
It was never going to last forever, was it? With the likes of McLaren Alpine coming back.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, that meant, though, to be honest, Jamie, I sort of looked at the end of qualifying, and I thought my predictions for the race were looking pretty tasty, to be honest, because I thought, well, Red Bull are just going to be able to outstrap Leclerc, because he's going to be there by himself. But...
Yeah, I was completely confident of a Max win when I woke up on Sunday morning.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, we both predicted Max to win the Grand Prix, as we'll discuss in a moment. Both got that very, very wrong. But, yeah, I think we were set up, though, for an interesting Australian Grand Prix. Of course, we get down to it, off the start. Charles Leclerc leads away from pole. Sainz, though, even more issues. After a terrible qualifying session, an awful start. But there was fair reasoning behind it, wasn't there?
Yeah. Was it his last minute his steering wheel got changed, didn't it? So didn't have the start settings correct on the new wheel. So yeah, didn't get a great launch. Dropped, I think, 3 or 4 places just before turn one. And then throughout the lap, he just kept finding himself in the wrong place at the wrong time. Just getting shuffled down the order. I think he was down to 15th or 14th by the end of lap
14th, yeah, at the end of lap 1.
Like between Joe and Schumacher, which is, not where a Ferrari should be on the end of lap 1. Yeah, it wasn't great. And it was on the hard as well, which didn't help because the warm-up was obviously worse. But yeah, it all kind of fell away from Sainz. What was happened lap 1? Well, neither Alfa Romeo stalled, which was nice for me.
Yeah, a shock change.
Yeah, although the starts weren't brilliant from either of them, but they weren't terrible, which is an improvement. So we go from there. I think Bottas was running just maybe 10th or 11th at the end of lap 1, and Joe was, 14th, 15th-ish? Something
13th,
like that.
Wasn't he? Yeah. Just ahead of Sainz.
Oh, yeah, just ahead of Sainz, wasn't he? So, yeah, it wasn't race over by the end of lap 1, which was nice. So, yeah. And then the only other real talking point, Hamilton got up to 3rd on the start. Obviously, Norris got a really bad start, I think. Hamilton jumped in immediately, and then Checo Perez had to kind of jump out the way of Max a little bit.
He
saw him get a bit of a run down the outside. Hamilton also braked super late, to be fair, but Checo was not taking any risks with the back end of his teammate. So got on the brakes a bit early. Hamilton got down the inside, but I think that didn't make much of a difference in the end because the pace of Red Bull was quite comfortably ahead of the Mercedes this race,
as it
has been all season, really.
But it seemed to me like an unnecessarily aggressive move from Verstappen at the start. I mean, let's be fair. We all know Perez is Verstappen's just right-hand man, isn't he? I just wonder, whether had they not done that right at the start, had Verstappen not been that aggressive, Perez has been fast this year. He's been right there with Max on pace.
What do you think was aggressive about it? I didn't think it was that bad.
Well, he came across Sergio's nose. Sergio had to lift out, otherwise they would have come together. He was still alongside him.
I don't know. I think it was effectively like front wing to rear tire, wasn't it?
Oh,
but
there
wasn't really a wedge. Like Max left him space. It was just Checo didn't. There's no.
Well, Max was forcing Checo to back out. If Checo had carried on foot to the floor, they would have come together. And I just wonder sort of whether at the start of a Grand Prix where it is two of you versus one of them, had Perez been ahead of Hamilton still, whether they could have done something more against Charles Leclerc.
More options, because Perez was kind of out of the win fight straight away.
Exactly. So I guess,
keep your options open if you have Checo there, don't you?
Yeah. But obviously, not the most chaotic start of the world. I mean, we've seen a lot of drama at Albert Park on turn one, lap one, or even down at turn three as well. It wasn't long, though, before things started kicking off, was it, Jamie? Just lap 2.
Yeah, and what we were saying earlier about the run down to turn 11, Sainz got a great run. I mean, obviously, you will do with the straight-on speed of the Ferrari versus, I want to say, Kevin Magnussen.
Tried
going down the outside into turn 11, which was never really going to work, I don't think, especially not with DRS. Well, there's no DRS there at all, but this was before DRS was inactive. In any sector. So, I think he was a bit desperate, if I'm honest, especially he was sort of clutching at straws all race weekend after that red flag in Q2, in Q3.
Yeah.
So, got on the grass because he took way too much speed and just couldn't get it slowed down. And then couldn't put his dad's rallying credibility into action.
No.
And completely lost the car and spun into the gravel and couldn't get it going. So, it was out on lap 2, which... It was a pretty bad error, I think, from Sainz. And that's unfortunately for him as well. He'd scored points every race since the end of 2020. with McLaren.
Yes.
So
yeah,
that has now ended. Or yeah. Not points, sorry. He finished 11th in France, didn't he, last year? But he'd finished.
Yeah, he had a really good reliability record.
I think it was Spa 2020, if I'm right in saying that.
That was really early 2020 as well, in the end, wasn't it?
Would have been Mugello. He crashed in Mugello, didn't he? So that was after.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
I mean,
this super long streak.
It was just odd from Sainz as well, because like you just mentioned there, he's had a really good reliability record recently. He's never been one that we've sort of thought of someone that makes sort of big mistakes like that anyway.
Yeah, well, he's known as sort of a smooth operator, isn't he? Like,
exactly.
He just goes about it quietly. That was a bold move on lap two against a car you're not going to be fighting all race.
And an uncharacteristic mistake on the grass as well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was pretty far ahead of K-Mag, to be honest. Had he just tipped it in and given K-Mag the room on the inside, it would have been a sloppy run off the exit of the corner, but he probably would have been able to defend from K-Mag down the next straight.
Yeah, definitely. And it was just a bit weird. I think Sainz didn't really look himself. Like, he was quite low in confidence, I think, after qualifying ninth.
Yeah, qualified ninth. So, yeah. Awful start. Wrong tyres.
You can tell he's put way too much pressure on himself, almost, like, trying to get that first win.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like once he gets that, he'll almost be able to kick on. But by then, it's already too late, I think, for the championship for him, to be honest. But there's a long way to go, so I'm sure if he won in Imola, then maybe he could kick on. But I just don't know.
I mean, Charles Leclerc basically knew over the winter, if Ferrari got a car that is capable, he's got to immediately bury Sainz first three races like he's done. Yeah. Ferrari would be stupid now to really try and work for Sainz ahead of Leclerc, I think, over the course of the year. But it's not what Sainz needed. It's not what Ferrari needed either, because they just can't handle that sort of unsettled... It's a pressure cooker over at Maranello, and it's just not going to work long term there. So Sainz definitely needs a regroup, a refresh. You know, if he can have a solid... Say, for example, they got a 1-2 at Imola next week or next race out... That would be exactly what Sainz needs, you know. Home race for Ferrari as well. Just sort of push this weekend completely behind you. Forget it happened. Reset, ready for then.
I think he almost needs more than that. I feel like he wants a weekend where he beats Leclerc on pace.
He probably needs that as well.
Like, he finished at Leclerc in the championship. Obviously, Leclerc had a lot of more
Leclerc was very unlucky, wasn't he?
Yeah.
We kind of pushed this narrative.
Yeah, Sainz was... on certain races the quicker Ferrari driver, and he hasn't had that at all this year.
No.
So he needs a race where he outqualifies and outpaces Leclerc in the race, which on Leclerc's form I don't really see happening anytime soon. But
you never know with the smooth operator, do you?
Yeah.
Moving on though, sort of we had a safety car, race slowly starts to unfold once again. Charles Leclerc dominates the way off the restart. Seb then on lap 11 almost spins it by himself. That was a bit of a scary moment, a lock-up down at the bottom of the hill. But almost Hamiltoned it, almost Lance Strolled it, but managed to get away with it. K-Mag then on lap 17, almost as a Carlos Sainz himself, after getting inspiration from the Spaniard trying to mug him around the outside. K-Mag tries it himself. Then we start to see the pit stops arrive.
Yeah, and I think the gap at the front had opened up quite large. It was what, 8 or 9 seconds?
Seven, eight seconds,
between Verstappen and Leclerc at the front, which at that point, at the end of the first stint, if you're 10 seconds behind, you're not gonna win unless something strange happens.
No.
Like, even from there on, it was kinda, you could tell that it wasn't gonna be another Bahrain or another Jeddah. Like, the Ferrari seemed to be the car in control this race.
They just had it worked out, didn't they? Yeah. Or at least Leclerc did anyway.
I think Max had some front left graining on the mediums as well, which didn't help at all. Like, potentially going a bit too fast to try and keep up with a Ferrari, and then sort of mess his tyres up. But he had to pit first out of the front pack.
Yes. Yeah.
I think Leclerc went two or three laps longer. Obviously, there was no real threat of undercut, so he didn't have to cover him straight away, and he didn't. So, status quo at the front. Although Russell didn't pit straight away.
Well,
was running what?
Lap 22 was when I think Verstappen pit around lap 20, wasn't it? We then saw Perez and Hamilton pit lap 22. Perez must have pit lap 21, and I think Hamilton was lap 22. We then see Perez immediately get a run down the back straight from turn 9 to a turn 11 past Hamilton. That Red Bull was fast down that straight and crashed into the Mercedes. And then suddenly we see yellow flags out.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shame. This is going to be a weird. weird stat for you, or not stat, but little memory. 2010, Melbourne. Interestingly, I don't know if you remember it, Hamilton in a McLaren back then goes around the outside of Rosberg at turn 11 in a Mercedes.
Do we mean new turn 11 or old turn 11?
I mean the same corner that Perez overtook.
Yes, yeah.
So whichever one, that the fast left-right chicane anyway.
Yeah.
Hamilton went around the outside of Rosberg. Rosberg got a great switchback, was going to go past Hamilton down the, towards the next corner, and then yellow flags came out because Sebastian Vettel had retired from the race.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was. I thought that was quite cool. Hamilton again getting involved in an overtake there. Would have definitely got Perez, I think, down in towards turn 13. And
yes,
the yellow flag
came
out because Seb's out. It's like very weird coincidence. But yeah, unfortunate for Hamilton. Although, yeah, I don't think it would have been made much difference because the Red Bull was definitely faster.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But it did mean we got another safety car because Sebastian Vettel, unlike 2010 where he had a brake failure, didn't he? This time round, he decided to do his best Kazuki Nakajima impression. Now, that is a throwback for some of you newer Formula 1 fans.
Yeah, 2009, Australia, obviously. He did the exact same thing. A driver without much reputation got absolutely trounced by a very young Nico Rosberg for 2 years in Williams. Did that exact same mistake, lit up the rear tyres on the exit curve at turn 4 and binned it into the wall. Lost his front wing. Seb does the exact same thing, which, yeah, I get that the car's hard to control. It's a bit unpredictable, but a four-time champ, one of the statistical top
you
five
don't,
all time.
Yeah. You don't end up on that curb. You avoid that curb. And you. The thing is as well, if you hit that curb, because I'm sure a lot of drivers did over the course of the weekend, you surely should know what to do in that situation. You just get out the throttle.
Yeah.
You either skate along the end of it and drop off the other side, or you try and just drag the car back off throttle. It was such a poor error by Sebastian Vettel. And I'm sorry, we completely agree the car isn't good. You should know how to avoid that situation happening.
Yeah. It was almost a rookie error. Like we saw...
It was, completely.
Like Mazepin Schumacher last year did that countless times in a Haas that was probably more hard to drive than the Aston is this year, to be fair to them. But they're both rookies. They're going to crash cars. Like... Seb is an experienced driver. He's in season 16, 17, I don't know, of his F1 career. It's been a long time. He shouldn't be making errors like that. I'm sorry.
But, no. Yeah. I mean, again, like we said, neither of us are big Seb fans, but even as someone that isn't a Seb supporter, it's just frustrating, isn't it, now? Because neither of us want to see Seb do badly anymore, to be honest, because it happens... Obviously, we both grew up in an era where Seb dominated the sport. And like a lot of people, you watch one driver dominate for too long, and unless you were already a fan of them, you're gonna get a bit bored. You want to start seeing them, you know, having these errors, everything like this. You know, sort of proving they're human, I think, is a lot of it for a lot of people, isn't it? You know, sort of proving they make mistakes like yourself. But with Seb now, it's just depressing. Because it seems to be the same thing over and over.
And it almost takes... I don't know, it takes credibility away from those four championships, I think. Like,
because
we've seen this season, obviously, a much smaller sample size, but Hamilton is no longer driving a car capable of running races right now. And he's not stuffing it in the wall and spinning every 2 seconds. Like, there's a brilliant interview with Fernando Alonso at the end of 2013.
Yes. The end of Seb's championship. I know exactly what you're referencing.
And he says, like Alonso says of Seb, one day he'll have a car the same as everyone else, and if he's still winning races, then fair enough, he's one of the greats. If he's suddenly making mistakes, like making errors, no longer like trouncing everyone like he was in 2013, especially the end of 2013, I think Alonso says these four championships will be bad news for Seb. Which I think is such a great quote, because it, like, obviously we're not just trying to dunk on Seb for this whole podcast, but it was...
He's probably the driver of the weekend. Him, Stroll and Latifi are the drivers you would dunk on, to be honest.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. Four championships, beating Mark Webber, who's an honest guy. But yeah, if you're looking at the top, certainly the top five, I would argue if you're looking at the top 10 statistical drivers in the sport, Seb is down there on weakest, if you're actually ranking them on talent.
Yes, yeah. But I mean, it's... getting to the point now, isn't it, where you're probably going to be comparing it to Michael Schumacher's return? Because let's be fair, again, both of us, you know, we appreciate completely just how good Michael was back in his day, but with the exception of probably a couple of flashes of greatness in 2012, he was pretty woeful. And in fact, on quite a few occasions, to be honest, quite dangerous on his return, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I love Michael. He's one of my, he's my goat. So, I will, but his comeback was not anywhere anything like how good he was originally.
Because the seven championships he had was a curse for him, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you're never going to, like, once you're no longer, to win six, well, seven, if Seb's had four, Hamilton's had seven, like, to win those championships, you're going to have a dominant car. And one day you're no longer going to have the dominant car, and you've got to show that they weren't a fluke.
Yeah.
And I think, to be fair to Michael, he did that in 05 and also 06, where he did very well.
And 05 was a bit woeful, but he still had, obviously, everything about that.
And even before he won his, like, five in a row, he was also performing a super high level.
Exactly.
Whereas Seb had that really good streak quite early in his career, and for the rest of it, he's kind of been trying to match up to it. And it's just
2015,
15 and 17, he was good. 15, he was very good. 17, he was on a top level until Baku, and that kind of was it. From
that
there
was
on,
the
he's
start
making
of the
mistakes.
Downfall, wasn't it?
Yeah. We'll move on from Seb. We'll get
exactly. Yeah,
we've
gone down a rabbit hole today, haven't we? Like we often do. Yeah, that though meant, like you said, though, George Russell hadn't pit yet. So when the safety car got deployed, he then managed to jump Checo and Lewis. So suddenly now we see Russell finding himself up in P3. Mick Schumacher then almost takes out Yuki Tsunoda under the safety car. That was certainly a Code Brown moment.
Yeah, that was dangerous. I don't know exactly how it happened, really. Because, like, Tsunoda didn't seem to be that far from the car ahead of him. So it was almost like Schumacher had a lapse of concentration, but even so, yeah, it was very strange. Lucky there was no the flying wheels or anything, because that would have been very nasty if they had come together, but luckily not, and then we got on with it.
Yes, yeah. I mean, second restart, this was something I'd actually mentioned to my dad after the first one. I could not work out for the life of me why Leclerc was going out of the penultimate corner rather than going for it out of the final corner. I said that then on the second run, as Leclerc almost completely lights up the rear tyres, and then is immediately under a lot of pressure from Verstappen.
I thought Max had him. Like, as soon as I saw Leclerc slide, I was like, oh, here's the opportunity. Especially with the straight on speed at Red Bull, but the straight just wasn't quite long enough. And I think Leclerc covered the inside straight away. So going ready outside turn one's nigh on impossible, with no DRS, especially in Australia. So yeah, Leclerc got away with one there, but it was the only real blot on his race. So fair play.
Yes, yeah, exactly. A small error like that, which ended up resulting in nothing anyway. We get into the second half of the race, though, things starting to it's kind of weirdly calmed down, didn't it, Jamie? There was there was a lot of close racing, but not really a lot was happening.
Stroll was up into eighth with a weird strategy.
Yes.
Which involved pitting twice in two laps at the first safety car.
Yeah.
But other than that, he was kind of training up everyone behind him. Driving quite dangerously, in my opinion. But
yeah, there were a couple of occasions we probably ought to note. Just before that, though, lap 36, Russell's told by the team, you know, Checo's too fast, just let him by. You know, we always hear Valtteri, it's James. I never thought we'd hear Valtteri. George, it's James.
George, it's Checo. George.
For another team. Yeah, it was all a bit strange, wasn't it? But then, lap 39, Jamie, talk us through it.
Yeah, it was so sudden. It was like, it basically just cut to a Red Bull on the side of the track, and it was Max. So, yeah, a bit annoying. Obviously, reliability issues happen. I'm glad it wasn't for the lead. He wasn't leading at the time. He had no real shot of winning. So, but yeah, it's peak times for Red Bull fans, isn't it? Like, 2 in 3 races, really?
Yeah,
like, after
the
reliability they showed last year with no real failures at all.
Checo had a few.
Yeah, but not... Yeah, for Max, it was all plain sailing, wasn't it? But
Yeah,
I mean, 2 in 3 races, it's a bit of a pill to swallow, but nothing Max can do about it. It's just a bit dead that he's 6th in a championship now. But there we go.
Yeah, I mean, heartbreak for Max Verstappen once again there. Completely different issue to what it was in Bahrain, but obviously, again, another...
fuel leak, apparently.
Yes, yeah. Fuel leak and everything like
that. Hopefully, I don't think it damaged the engine, which is lucky, because...
he got it stopped pretty quickly.
Yeah.
which is the important thing there. But yeah, that was immediately after he'd gone fastest though as well. So there was all this speculation I saw online going, oh, did he break the car by trying to push for fastest lap?
That's one of your arguments for Palmer, that, back in the day.
Palmer would often set fastest lap after fastest lap there. It was the car that was not good enough for the driver in that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, though, like we said, race is weirdly unfolding, isn't it? Like we said, we kind of didn't really know what was going on. We had a few weird things. We had Alex Albon, who hadn't pit still for some reason.
Yeah.
I think he was waiting for Latifi to bin it and then get a free pit stop that way.
It's a pretty safe bet, like, based on the first two race weekends, that Latifi's going to crash at some point.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
yeah, it was weird. The second safety car did screw over the hard runners quite a lot. I think Alonso as well was running fourth after the restart because
yes,
he hadn't pit.
Yeah. It was just that bit too early, wasn't it, still?
It was bad timing, yeah. But yeah, Albon was running seventh with the two McLarens, fifth and sixth. Yeah, it was weird because the top six, there was no action at all, really. And then all the action was Stroll driving like a bit of a maniac in the midfield.
Well,
and everyone trying to get
around him. Lap 42, Stroll, let's be fair, basically rammed obviously, you can't really ram Valtteri Bottas off the road because he kind of jumps out of the way, doesn't he?
But it was on a restart from VSC. I think Bottas was caught napping and Stroll went down the inside when it went green. And
why was there a VSC? Why have I completely forgot this?
For Max.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, of course. I just wanted you to say it again.
Yeah, so... Tears in my eyes.
Bottas kind of gets pushed off the road by Lance Stroll. Then, yeah, like you said, Stroll just kind of becomes a dick for the rest of the afternoon
to
people.
Basically. And has no remorse about it. He got a penalty for weaving on Bottas.
Yep, he got a penalty for weaving on Bottas. But he just decides Alex Albon's now his best mate, and he's going to completely make probably make Albon's career, to be honest.
Yeah, Albon will be harking home about this P10 in a Williams for the rest of his life.
Well, exactly.
Because, like, you had the likes of Gasly, Tsunoda, Joe, Bottas, like less so because Bottas got past okay quickly, but Magnussen, Schumacher, all of them would have beaten Albon.
And this
had
is
Stroll
the,
not
this,
been there.
Yeah, this was the thing as well that was so weird about Albon getting the points, because you looked at it with 10 laps to go and he's coming out last still. He's going to come out behind
still behind the Hasses
and
the Latifi.
Suddenly, lap 57 of 58, as Charles Leclerc's crossing the line, Albon dives in, goes onto a set of soft compound tyres. Of course, then none of the cars behind Leclerc can get him at all.
Yeah,
even then the penalty Stroll got didn't mean anything because all the cars behind him got lapped.
Stroll was the last car on the lead lap, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah. So the 5 second penalty meant nothing at all. It just meant
to compensate his three place penalty in quali also meant nothing because he qualified last.
Yeah.
It's like he got a 3 place penalty, went from 20th to 19th.
Yes, yeah, because Albon got disqualified.
Yeah.
It just meant
a very strange weekend.
Guan Yu Zhou had one chance, didn't it, onto the final lap.
Yeah.
It was going to be now or never for more Formula 1
P10.
Points.
And he didn't, unfortunately. No. But there
he
we go.
He just lit up the throttle at turn one. It was heartbreak.
Yeah, got a bit excited.
But I think, let's be fair, Albon would have probably just about been able to stay ahead of him anyway.
I think so. Especially with the softs versus, like, what, 30-lap old hards at that point?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
The only other sort of talking point we had towards the end, of course, was Hamilton had a few sort of technical issues late on in the afternoon that meant I don't think he was probably going to jump George again, but wasn't able to apply pressure like I think he wanted to. But
yeah,
that meant Charles Leclerc, his first ever Grand Slam in Formula One. Which,
Grand Chelem.
Yeah, Grand Chelem. Which, of course, the race only deemed that a 9.0 rating. We're going to bring that up. That, for me, let's be fair, 9.5 at least, wasn't it? The only mistake he made was that restart, and even that didn't matter.
Too fair to the race, they're fairly consistent in that
they gave
only
Lando a 9.5 last year for Russia.
Yeah, but that was as much on the team as the driver, I thought. But yeah, they shouldn't have given 9.5 then. But, like, I understand they only give out 10s when you have a faultless weekend.
Yeah.
Like, I think Max got a 10 in Zandvoort, if I remember correctly. But yeah. A 9 seems a bit harsh when you lead every lap.
It should have been a 9.5, shouldn't it, really?
Yeah. That only mistake was that sliding out of the second restart. So.
And even then, we probably wouldn't have realised that was a mistake if it hadn't happened on a restart.
Yeah.
Was the other thing, wasn't it?
Completely.
But that meant, yeah, Charles Leclerc dominated in the end, 20 seconds clear of Sergio Perez at the chequered flag. Russell P3 ahead of Hamilton and Lando Norris there. McLaren 5th and 6th there with Ricciardo getting his first points of the year. Esteban Ocon, Valtteri Bottas, Pierre Gasly just missed out, actually. He bottled it, didn't he, with a couple of laps to go. Meant that Bottas obviously jumped Gasly. Yeah, yeah. So more points for Alfa Romeo there. And yeah, Alex Albon, first points of the year for Williams.
Yeah, fair play. It was very much helped by Lance Stroll, but got to do what you got to do. Take the opportunity when there, and he did. So yes. Fair enough.
Yeah, exactly. So looking at that then, Jamie, driver of the day.
Well,
and why does it go to Charles Leclerc?
Well, it's between Leclerc and Albon, really, isn't it? I would give it to Leclerc, though, because, yeah, like we said, Albon, his pace was good, but it was massively helped by the by Stroll. So, yeah, Leclerc had everyone at arm's length, really, so fair.
Exactly.
I think we've been proper boring so far, and just given driver of the day to the winner every race. But
to be fair, every time, they have deserved it, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think,
yeah,
you know, we might, if we start seeing Ferrari dominate, get a bit bored and kind of expect Leclerc to be winning these races.
Yeah,
like you said, though, Albon definitely deserves a shout-out there. I also think, shout-out-wise again, Bottas had a very quiet but good afternoon. More points for Alfa Romeo, which was solid. Stroll, I would, you know, looking at it on paper, 19th to 12th was pretty good in that Aston Martin, but like we said, he was a tool all afternoon, so I don't think you can really give him anything there. And yeah, just obviously Alonso being really unlucky to finish right at the back.
He had great pace.
A race weekend of so much promise.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate for Alonso, but yeah, that's much like his career, showed potential and then petered out.
Yeah, lots of mistakes meant he gets screwed. Let's go over then, Jamie. I feel happy finally talking about this for once. It's F1 fantasy time.
I'm lagging a bit because my phone hotspot can't cope me trying to load up my fantasy team as well. But there we go.
Oh, I'm feeling happy this week about F1 fantasy.
I'm not so much, but there we go. I think I remember my points on my team, so I'm not going to bother loading it up. But there we go. We'll make sure to get it on the screen for you once again. Are you still there, Matt?
I'm still here. I can hear you.
There we go. Yeah, I think we're all good now. The connection's sorted itself out. Yeah, I didn't do great. I'm going to say unlucky. I think
I'm going to say not very clever.
What, picking Verstappen and Alonso, the two fastest drivers for their teams this race weekend, and both of them, 17th and 19th come the end of the race.
Yeah, your fault, mate.
It was quite unlucky. Yeah, I should have known that Perez is going to beat Verstappen, shouldn't I? Yeah, I think I would, 140?
140?
It was 144 or something like that.
I didn't realise you could score that little. I think, I'm going to try and save your bacon here. I thought you got 150 odd, because you sent me a picture this morning. You got 156, in all fairness.
Okay, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. Although all those points came from Ferrari and Leclerc Turbo.
Yes, yeah. That also cannot be understated. Jamie, 221.
Yeah, you smashed it. I reckon that's right up there with, best...
I'm going to have a look at a minute. That has got to be right up there for pretty much a theoretical max. Because I had all the podium. I had Ferrari. I also had, of course, Albon, who had a brilliant recovery. But because he got DQ'd, only scored me 5 points. And then K-Mag as well, who had a quiet afternoon and probably could have done a little bit more. Let's have a look then over at the league. Sorry, I've just got to try and find the league again.
Do this on your own this time, because my...
I don't know where the league's gone, Jamie. It's disappeared. Oh, here we go. I don't know how I forgot that. 4,315 of you now. That is just insane.
Where are you up to, out of curiosity?
Where am I now, actually? Why, do you know where you are?
I think I know where I am, or roughly. I can see the ballpark.
Oh, I'm back inside the top 1,000, Jamie. 940th.
Okay, I'm still ahead. It's all good.
How many points have you got?
20th. I don't know. I can't look it up. My internet will not let me.
I'm on 586 points after this weekend.
I can't be much more than that. I'm about 100 places ahead of you, so I must be quite similar.
Let's have a look quickly at the let's go top maximum score from Australia, first of all. That's what I want to find out. See how close I must have been to that. So, the best possible team, then, was Megan Leclerc, Fair enough. Perez turboed. Bottas, Schumacher, yep. Ocon, Mercedes. Oh, yeah, Mercedes got the most points for a team, didn't they? I mean, that's a wild team to go with. Why on earth you keep Mercedes in there with that much money? But clearly it's worked out for you. But yeah, looking though at our league then, if it wants to let me go back to it. Yeah, 4,300 of you now, obviously. If you want to get involved, there is links everywhere on my channel still. I'm always plugging the league. Top so far then, let's actually do a quick shout out to our Australian Grand Prix. F1 Keon, who I see a lot around the channel. 302 points there with a team of Leclerc turboed, Russell Mega Driver. That was an interesting gamble.
Wow.
Ferrari, Perez, Bottas and K-Mag. So pretty much the same team as me. Caden B in P2 there, 296 points. Aldo D in P3 there with 288. And then the rest of our top 10 was Tony, Marius, Pat, Tom, Alexandra, Dave and Justin, as well as Dan S, all tied in P9. I came, Jamie, this week. Let's have a look here, sorry. Just one second. I came 150th.
That's not bad, Dan.
Without using my mega, that's pretty good. That would have been
probably
close to top 100.
Yeah.
Because everyone inside the top 20 used their mega. Yeah, so I would have been about 120th.
I do kind of think that long-term my team will score more than yours, and you got quite lucky this race for Perez and Russell to both beat our teammates, kind of by luck.
I think I've smashed it, personally.
You have smashed it, but we'll see. We'll see in Imola.
Exactly, we will. Top 10 overall, though, currently in the league, then. It's currently Krista out on top there with 769 points, ahead of Aline on 756. Joe in 755 there, ahead of Ray T. Krista's in P5 ahead of Will M, Andrea M, Tay B, Ricardo B, and then Caleb C with 731 there. So massive congratulations to our top 10 after this week. Of course, let me know down in the comments below how well you got on as well. You know, let me know if you beat 221, or let me know just how much you beat 156 points by in this week's running. Moving on, though, over to our personal little bet then, Jamie. Unfortunately, I didn't do as quite well in our predictions recap, did I?
No. I got pretty lucky, I'm fair. I'll take that upon myself, because I put Red Bull 1-2 with Leclerc third, which obviously
you got the
didn't
two.
Happen. Well, yeah, so I got Perez bang on by complete luck, and obviously Leclerc on the podium, which is where he was on the podium. So I got 3 points overall, with obviously pole position was incorrect with Verstappen. You put same as me, apart from you had
Verstappen. I had Leclerc and Verstappen the other way around, which screwed me.
No, Leclerc and Perez the other way around.
So sorry, yes, Verstappen. Yeah. Even
Verstappen, Leclerc, Perez was your top three, which you got 1 out of 3. No, 2 out of 3.
Sorry, 2 out of 3,
yeah.
I got 2
so
podium,
I've extended my
one.
Lead by 1.
Yeah, 10
so
versus 8.
So can you give us the overall scores? 10-8, nice.
So Jamie's
so a long
building
way
up
to go, obviously.
Yeah, Jamie's building up a little bit of an advantage at the moment. But I'm sure I will close back down over the next few weeks then. Of course, next week out there, we'll do all our predictions and preview for Imola. Of course, really, really looking forward to being there, but I'll discuss that more next week. Last major question then, I think, Jamie. A race rating out of 10.
Out of 10, I'm pretty sure, just for some scale, I think I gave the first two both 8s.
Yes, yeah.
So, I'd go for a 6. It wasn't terrible, but I would definitely rather watch the other two.
Yeah, I hate the fact we both know wheels so well that every week I want to give exactly the same score as you. I will also give it a 6. I think, you know, on paper, looked like quite an exciting race. I think we know some of the track changes at Australia have kind of worked, haven't they?
Yeah. It's definitely a better Melbourne race for action than we've seen in the past few times we've been there.
Yeah. Nice as well, obviously, of course. It's such a weird feeling, isn't it? I know we mentioned it. The fact that, you know, we categorise this race as quite weird because there was a lot of close racing, but not a huge amount of stuff happening. That's what modern Formula One is. Obviously, we're hoping there's going to be a lot of stuff happening a lot, but cars being close together is kind of what we're hoping now, and kind of what, obviously, they're aiming for in Formula One.
There was a harrowing stat they gave on the commentary in the race that was like, they were going through a number of overtakes in previous races. In 2017, there were
two on-track
passes. And both of them were on Alonso. It was Hulk and Ocon. Both went past him in one go.
Yes, 3 wide, weren't they? Down into T1.
Yeah. So, like, that was it.
Yeah.
And compared to that, we got way more action. So it's all right.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, Albert Park, I think, prior to this season, of course, throughout the Turbo Hybrid era, had averaged the third least overtakes of any Grand Prix on average. Yeah. Only behind Monaco and...
I'd want to guess Singapore, maybe, but I'm not sure.
I don't think Singapore, because obviously 2017 was carnage.
Oh, yeah.
This thing, you got to try and find a race that's just dead most years. I want to say Spain. I think sensibly Spain is probably a likely shout.
Yeah.
But
it definitely improved the track.
Exactly, exactly. So. It was a good change. The fourth DRS zone, not sure, you know, maybe that would have allowed either Stroll to get overtaken or Ori would have barged cars into a wall. So we'll wait and see about that one. But it does now mean every team but Aston Martin has got points on the board, doesn't it?
Yeah, and Aston haven't been too far from getting points. I don't know if they'll go the whole season pointless, to be honest. I
can't imagine so.
No.
In many ways, I hope they don't.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see everyone score. I don't see Williams being in there regularly. I think Albon got fairly lucky this race. But
yeah,
fair play to him.
But I don't think we'll see Aston Martin being there fairly often either, to be honest.
That's true.
But yeah, nice to see McLaren, though, back where we kind of expected them to be, wasn't it? Whether that's going to occur a bit more or not, we'll have to wait and see over the next few races.
Back at a certain member of his podcast predictions. I don't think it'll be Mercedes anytime soon. Or Red Bull, sorry, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, if I'm only one out with those two, I mean, my top two, I think, are pretty bang on, aren't they? Like, a lot of mine aren't that far out.
Mine's looking quite good, especially the old Alfa Romeo pick, which I got slated for.
Yeah, yeah, no, but there's plenty of time for them to fall down the order.
Yeah, that's true.
Give it time, Jamie, give it time.
I'm backing myself. If I picked one of us to be most right, I would think I'm winning.
Yeah, at the moment I think you are. But then again, I beat you last year, mainly because Ferrari then suddenly edged out McLaren late on in the game.
Yeah.
But that's how these things go sometimes. Anything else to add from you, though, Jamie?
I don't think so. I think that's
about
everything.
I think we have pretty much gone through everything this week, haven't we? It was a weird week where it felt like there was a lot of stuff to go through, but, you know, a lot of speculation now moves towards Imola, doesn't it, next time round. Sprint racing back, Formula 2, Formula 3. I've got an action-packed weekend in Imola. I'm really, really excited for it. But, like we said, though, we'll talk about that a whole lot more next week. So, yeah, unless there's anything else to add from you, Jamie?
No.
Leave
your thoughts in the race in the comments, all that.
Exactly, all that good stuff. But, as always, though, a massive thank you to all of you guys for the continued support on the channel. We've smashed through now 42,000 subscribers. Every week I feel like we do one of these podcasts. I thank you guys for another milestone. We're now well on our way to 43k as well, which is just stupid at the moment. Like I said, though, links to Bybit, links to the F1 merch store, links to the Spotify as well, everything will be down below. Manscaped as well, if you want to go check that out. And we'll be back next week then, ready to preview the Emilia-Romagna still, Jamie? I think it is, isn't it?
I think so.
We're back once more then, previewing the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix.